This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun-sik. Mahi Ramakrishnan is a documentary filmmaker, and her two films on the Rohingya refugee crisis are Seeds of Hatred and Bodies for Sale. Recently, she and her son started an online platform to match refugees seeking work with employers willing to hire refugees. It's called Refugee at Work. Mahi is here to tell me more about that. And joining her is Satya Etikan, co-founder of Sahana Banana Leaf, who has hired 10 refugees through this platform. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mahi, how did this idea come about?
We have been working with the refugee community, particularly the Rohingya refugee community, over the last 11 years. And that includes bringing in aid, making sure that pregnant mothers get access to hospital deliveries and stuff like that. And it came to a point that we realized that this is not sustainable anymore. We can't keep giving, and there's just not enough resources or logistics or money. So we decided that we needed to do something that will make it sustainable, self-sustainable for the refugees. And that is how the platform was born.
We, meaning you and your son?
Yeah, me and my son.
And your connection to the crisis is very personal.
Well, I started 11 years ago working with the Rohingya community, and that's because my grandmother was Rohingya. She met my grandfather in Burma. I have no idea where exactly. And then my grandfather and her fell in love, and they eloped to Malaysia. So my mom is first-generation Malaysian. And when I got to know about this story, I kind of got curious. And because I'm a journalist and I had access to the community, I started getting to know them, and I wanted to know how the language felt like, what kind of food they ate. And I had no idea about the persecution or the suffering that they had gone through. But having gotten to know them better, I understood that they were going through living hell. And because I couldn't trace my grandmother, because we didn't know which village she comes from, every time I looked at a person who was telling me this story of persecution, in my head I'll be thinking, could this be my family? Could this be my relative? That is how the foray into this work with the refugees, the Rohingya refugees, started. And I've done not just two films, but I've also done lots of news articles and feature articles on them as well.
So how were they making a living before this platform?
Well, most of them do odd jobs, and that is like collecting scrap metal and selling it for like 30 or 20 ringgit a day. And the community works in this way. You have a few of them working, and they bring the money back to the community, and that is shared amongst a few people who live in a particular house, for example. But that's not enough, and that's just never enough. So once I went to a Rohingya village in Ampang, and it was during Ramadan, and it broke my heart because they only had boiled rice and coconut water that they had plucked from coconuts that they had actually plucked along the way. And that's all that they had to breakfast. So they live in utter poverty here. It's very difficult, not just for the Rohingya, but for every other refugee as well. Livelihood is incredibly difficult here because they are not allowed to work legally, and they cannot send their children to school. So it's incredibly difficult.
Legality is what we'll go into in just a bit. But Satya, how did you come across this Facebook page?
Through Mahi, certainly. And I got to know Mahi through another business of mine where she comes there to do her nails. And that's how I got to know her. And I liked her page, and I started reading a lot about Rohingyas and the sexual abuse, the kids, you know, and overall about refugees. I started reading about refugees as well. And, you know, recently in Syria, the kids were bombed. I have two girls in the house, you know, so that really touches me a lot. So I went and spoke to Mahi that how will I be able to help these people in any way that I could. Yeah, so that's where we were opening a business. And I gave a suggestion to Mahi that, you know, instead of me bringing in people from India or Sri Lanka or anywhere else, can I bring these people to work, you know? I can let them work, give them food, pay them, where they can support their family at the same time. So, yeah, that's how it started, actually.
How long did the process take from conception to the moment where you're able to hire them?
That took about almost a month plus, because most of them, they really want to work because they have no food to eat. They have no place to stay. So the moment they found out through Mahi. Mahi filtered some of them and she started bringing in interview. So I spoke to them. I had an interview with them. They were very excited to work. They really wanted to work immediately. And I brought them into the restaurant. We started training them from scratch, everything. So, yep.
And Mahi, what was the interviewing process like? There was a ready pool of workers who you already know are keen to work and you know are able to work.
Actually, in every refugee community, there are lots of people who are willing to work. And what I did was I got in touch with the community leaders from the Ahmadi, the Pakistani community, to the Afghan Hazara community, to the Rohingya community, and also the Somalian community. And it also took them some time because I did tell them that the requirement is that they have to speak a little bit of English and or Malay. So that took a little bit of time to find the right person. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a restaurant business, and so they need to converse. There's no running, and there's, you can't run away from that. So that took a little bit of time. And then what we would do is that we get them to come to an LRT station, and then we pick them up from there. And then me and my son took turns to take them to go and see Satya so that she can talk to them and explain to them what the restaurant is about, the kind of food that she'll be serving, and if they are going to be comfortable working, the kind of work that they'll be doing and the working hours that they'll be keeping. So that was a kind of interview. It wasn't like, oh God, it's a formal interview and what am I going to do about it? Nothing like that. It was just a chat, actually. It was a very friendly chat. And after that, they go back and then she'll let me know after 1 or 2 days that, you know, she's happy to take them on. And I will text them and tell them that, you know, they need to come to work on the 1st because the training started for them actually on the 1st of April.
And what's the legality of employing refugees here now?
Well, if you're going to ask me, is it legal? Is what I'm doing legal? Then, of course, there's a problem there. But then if you really look at it from the other side, people and their inherent human rights are way above the law. I'm not saying that you need to break the law. I'm just saying that in most instances, pressing instances, it is okay to work around the law. And here what we are doing is we are not doing anything criminal. We are trying to get jobs for refugees so that they can become self-sustainable. Because if you really look at it, they are a part of the Malaysian society. There are easily 500,000 refugees from different parts of the world in Malaysia. And they are here and they'll continue to be here. So if you do not give them jobs, then the question is, what are they going to do for food? How are they going to pay their rent? How are they going to put food on the table for the family? And the only way to answer this is to create jobs so that they can become self-reliant, financially independent.
And Satya, how's the training going on now? It's been almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, it has been really tough because they don't understand the food that we serve. So, and they're not very fluent in Malay and English. So my restaurant opened on the 10th, but we were running the training from the 1st. So, quite tough, but some of them are very skillful. We can train them. We can train them, and yep. And even I put up a notice in my restaurant in a few sections saying that refugees are at work. Please support them, you know, and just don't discriminate them in a sense of like indirectly. Sometimes customers get very upset. I asked you for teh tarik, you brought me something else, you know. And it happened, yeah, from the 1st right up today. I had to handle so many problems, you know. But I had to put up a notice that they're very vulnerable right now. So I have to be very tactful in my customers the same time, yeah.
She actually has a signboard which says, you know, the as part of the CSR for the management, we have hired refugees and they may not be fluent in Malay or English. So, you know, please, we appreciate your understanding and patience. And today I brought two friends to the restaurant and they were taking photos of it because they thought that it was really incredible. I mean, she's really gone out of her way to make this possible and, you know, making sure that the accommodation that they get is incredible accommodation and that they get, you know, she treats them like they're like their own kids, actually.
And do you find that customers who frequent your place, are they receptive to the sign when you say refugees are employed here?
So far, there's only two customers who came and shook my hand and said, you are doing a very fantastic job, you know, and the rest of them seems to be, they just want to eat and, you know, I got to go catch my, go back after lunch, yeah.
My guests today are Mahi Ramakrishnan, co-founder of Refugees at Work, and Satya Etikan, co-founder of Sahana Banana Leaf. After the break, I'll ask them about our government's pilot scheme to integrate Rohingyas into our workforce, BFM 89.9. This is Live and Learn. Good afternoon. I'm Chua Antik. My guests today are Mahi Ramakrishnan, co-founder, Refugee at Work, an online platform matching refugees looking for work with prospective employers. Satya Etikan, co-founder of Sahana Banana Leaf, who has hired 10 refugees in their operation recently. So Satya, having gone through this process, what kind of advice would you have for other people, other business owners who are open to the idea of hiring refugees as well?
Yeah, please contact Mahi and get these people, you know, give them job. All they need is food, a little bit of love. They are okay, they are safe, and give them a place to stay. That's all they need right now. And all they want is to just want to send some money back home to their country. Yeah.
I think most people would not know what to expect, right? And that unknown is what's causing that apprehension. It's not really that they have a position or they're not willing to. It's just about awareness. Yeah.
Yep.
And so how are you reaching out, Mahi, to more employers?
Yes, actually, that's the forte of my son. What he does is, you know, he goes into a place and he says, okay, you know, I want to talk to you about something. And he's got incredible PR. That's a way he does it. I can't do it. And he introduces the idea of educating refugees. He talks to them about refugees. And he says, you know, would you like to, come on board and maybe get one person to work with you and see how it goes. So instead of just waiting at home for phone calls, we are also introducing the idea of potential employers employing refugees in their workplaces.
And when he does that, do they find that they're generally receptive and willing, or are they reluctant and suspicious?
Well, it's 50-50 because some of them have heard about refugees. They have heard about the Rohingya. They have heard about the Palestinians because we have been talking about the Palestinians for decades now. And also the Syrian crisis because it's ongoing and it's catching the limelight in, you know, major newspapers. So they are aware of it. And some of them are very curious, but there is also apprehension there. But, you know, every time I screened my film, I always said that we are always afraid of something that we do not know in its completion. When we do not understand something in its entirety, then we are always apprehensive or fearful. So it's always good for people to actually get to know refugees, sit down with them, have a coffee, talk to them, and you will understand that they are just like you and me with the same hopes and dreams and aspirations for their children. They are not out here because they want to leave their home and run. You know, every time you pack your bags to go overseas, you're very careful about, you know, you'll check your lock, you'll want to make sure that everything is great so that when you come back, you know, everything is the way you left it. But these people are fleeing persecution. They're fleeing homes that they have made, homes that they have created with their families. And all they have to do is pack their bags and just leave. And that's difficult. The moment we understand that, we can become a little bit more compassionate, a little bit more open-minded to not just getting them to work in our establishment, but also getting to know them.
Satya, the restaurant opens officially on April 15.
And it's our grand opening. Mm-hmm. Our officially, I mean, soft launch has happened on the 10th. Mm-hmm. We started operating on the 10th.
And you said in the press release that this effort is part of your contribution to the government's opening up or maybe softening the position at allowing refugees here to work.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, what was your first introduction to this issue?
Definitely through Mahi again. And I started reading about all these people here. And and when I had interviews with these people, got to know a little bit more about themselves and their family back home and how they actually came to Malaysia, some of them through boat and some of them through, like, you know, few countries to here. Yep, and all those things, yeah.
Can you tell us about some of them, some of the refugees that you have hired?
I have, at the moment, I have about 6 Rohingyans working with me. And one of the boy, he's very young. I think he's about 20, and he has got six of them in the family, and he is the youngest. and he have four sisters and one brother, younger brother, I suppose, yeah, if I'm getting it right, yeah. And they're all in the refugee camp. They are in refugee camp, and they're all treated like, you know, not that good. They can't study. They can't go anywhere. Everything is so strict. So, you know, so he kind of like eloped to this country, I think. Yeah, so he's here and hoping that he can send some money back home.
Right.
To his family, so that the parents are very old, so they can, you know, have some food, buy what they want to have for themselves.
What do you think of this pilot job initiative by the government allowing 300 Rohingyas to work?
I think it's a great idea, and I hope it works, and I hope that the government will also extend this to other refugee communities as well, because you cannot favour one refugee community against the other, because you cannot quantify suffering. So it'll be great if the government can make this a successful effort and also extend this to other communities as well. I heard that the government said like only 40 Rohingya have come forward so far to register. And I do not know how the registration process is about, and it could be a little bit cumbersome because most of the Rohingyas haven't even gone to school. Yes, there are some people who can speak and read and write English, elementary English at least, but a lot of people haven't really gone to school. So the process could in itself be a little bit more daunting. Yeah.
Yes, and in that same report, it was quoting the Deputy Home Minister, Dato' Noor Azlan, of saying that Rohingyas prefer not to work in structured jobs like factory work. Is there any truth to this from your experience working with them?
I think that there may be some truth to it because they have... You know, there's never been a structure to their life. If you really look at what has happened in Burma, in Arakan, there's never been a structure. They do not know about organizational structure. They have been fleeing persecution from the late 70s. So all they know is about survival, about hanging on to life, about keeping their children, their family and their relatives safe. So here, you need to put them in an environment where they need to get to work at a certain time and get back home at a certain time. It will take a little bit of assimilation process to make it possible for them to adapt into this environment because of the persecution that they have gone through, actually. But he's not all that wrong. And in fact, I was thinking that, you know, I would really like to get in touch with him, to talk to him about this online platform that we have created, and to ask if there's any way in which we can actually work with the government to make this work registration pilot project for the Rohingya possible and successful.
Satya, refugees coping with structure, do you find that there's a challenge as well at Sahana?
Yep, yeah. Certainly.
It's an 8-hour shift, and I'm guessing?
It's actually 12 hours. 12 Any hours. Restaurant is 12 hours, and they get break in between.
Mm-hmm. What's challenging for them to adapt to this environment?
We had some refugees who couldn't cope, you know, the trainings and some of them who has left. Actually, I had about four Somalians who have left. And I have two Pakistanis who left as well. And then, yes, and after that interview comes in and other refugees come in on board. But it's just that they picture something else in their brain and they come into work, you know. And some of them, they really can't work.
Right.
And I have to say I'm sorry. I can't, you know, I can go certain level to help them, but some of them, right, they're not taking that advantage to work.
I don't know if this is a fair question, but I'm asking you to speculate a little here. But yeah, what do you think their expectation were when they come to work for you? Because I suspect from what Mahi was saying, the putting together a living just on odd job is just as challenging, if not more, compared to a structured environment like a restaurant.
What happens is that when they come looking for jobs, I think they find it easier to work when it's not fixed hours, and when it's a little bit easier, when they can take off whenever they it suits them, when they can go away and rest for an hour or two, when they feel like doing it. And they do not understand that that's not how the real world
is.
Works.
Yeah.
Right.
It's more to like, it's proper, like, you know, you clock in at 7 and then your break time is this time. And it's, they just cannot, they're not registering that. They cannot comprehend those. And that's the difficult part that I'm still facing with them. Yeah.
And this is a good thing for us, actually, because the Refugees at Work, it's not just an online platform that makes employment possible for refugees, but we have another vision to it, and it's an end-to-end thing where we would like to give some training in English and Malay so that they are able to speak. And then we have identified certain sectors, whether it's the food and beverage or, you know, tertiary sectors or services sectors, where the refugees are happy to be employed in. And then we hope to see them working for about 1 to 2 years. And then we will go to the owners and tell them that we have another pool of refugees. Can we now, you know, talk to a few refugees whom you have already trained on the job to see if some of them would like to come out, for example, like from her restaurant, one or two or three would like to come out and get into a small catering business or something like that. And we are happy to bring in more refugees. So what she is going to be doing with us is also working with us to kind of like do the on-the-job training so that when these people come out, we can put them through another training of how do you do a business? How do you make sure you don't go bankrupt in like 3 days flat? You know, how
for the
do
refugees.
You, yeah, for the yeah. refugees. How do you keep accounts? How do you look for your suppliers? How do you market yourself? You know, what are your biggest potential? What can be your biggest weaknesses and challenges? And it's incredible that now she's saying that, you know, it's also, I anticipated this, but it's good that she's saying that they cannot register or compute with the fact that they need to come in at a certain time and leave at a certain time and be there, you know, and only go out during the break hours. So I think during the initial stages of training, we can incorporate this to make them understand that the real life out there, the real workforce, the working life out there means that you need to clock in and clock out. So that, you know, when the refugees are going to see their employers, they already have an idea as to how the working environment is also going to be.
I imagine there'll be a lot of bureaucracy to work around with, because for a community that's marginalized and almost invisible, they're not allowed to get like a bank account, for example. They don't have a national identity card. So all these things to even set up a business, is it not very hard?
When I say that setting up a small business, I'm just saying that maybe catering for 40 or 50 people. I'm talking about being a freelance makeup artist or being a freelance tailor, where you can do your job at home and you have got people coming in to give their clothes for you to sew, that kind of thing. Or they can themselves provide some training for the next batch of refugees who are interested, for example, in learning how to do bridal makeup or in learning how to sew clothes. So there's a huge potential for the platform. And I'm now trying to concretize what it is that we are trying to do so that we can go out there and also look for some kind of funding to make this this vision possible. So it's really about sustainable livelihoods, but it's end-to-end, not just putting them in a place they work and they work for the rest of their lives, but working together with people who have employed them so that the on-the-job training can be given, and then they can come out, get some sort of a business training, if I can call it that, and then be their own entrepreneurs.
So you've been working on this for 11 years. What do you think is stopping us from granting refugees here the right to work or even allowing their children to go to school?
See, Malaysia has not ratified the 1951 UN Refugee Convention, but if you really look at it, and to be fair to the government, there are 500,000 refugees here and the government has allowed them to be here. So that's a big plus for the government. But obviously, there is no political will to do it. And every time I've done interviews with some members of parliament, they say that we are afraid that if we ratify the convention, it'll open up the floodgates and people will just, there'll be a huge influx. So I'm like, there's already an influx of people. Every time you see something happening in Burma, the Rohingyas are running here. The Palestinians are coming here. The Syrians are coming here. And at the end of the day, it is a collective responsibility of every government, of each and every one of us, to ensure that these refugees are protected and that they feel safe here. So it'll be nice if the government can relook its policy, because it's commendable that Malaysia's Prime Minister has actually spoken up and condemned the violations against the Rohingya on a platform, and that he has actually used the word genocide to describe the targeted persecution. So this is commendable. And we have not seen any ASEAN head of state who has actually stood up and spoken for the Rohingya refugees. But now the Prime Minister, and also the Prime Minister, has come up with this drive to get 300 refugees to work as a pilot project. So this is brilliant. But now the government really has to take that extra step and say that we will ratify the convention so that the rights of refugees can be recognized, so that their children can go to school, so that they can work legally in the country and fend for themselves. You know, at the end of the day, the fact is we don't have to bring in foreign workers from outside to work our sectors. We already have an existing pool of workers here. We can retrain them, reskill them, put them into the workforce, get them to pay a tiny bit towards the healthcare so that, you know, they have also played their part. And in that way, they can be instrumental to the growth of Malaysia. We do not need to look at them as enemies or people who are sucking our resources and logistics. They can contribute effectively to the economy as well. It's really about how we are going to position ourselves. And it would be incredible if the government recognizes the rights of all refugees in Malaysia.
Satya, any final message for listeners out there who might be open to the idea of hiring refugees?
Well, I have, my intention is to help. So whoever, all the employers out there who, the intention is just to help and just don't look back, just go ahead and do it. That's the right thing. For me, this is the right thing.
You can look for Refugee at Work by going to facebook.com/empoweringrefugees.
Thank you. Thank you for having us here.
You've been listening to Live and Learn BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.